Hello, growers of the world. Thank you for tuning in today. Jordan River here. I appreciate you tuning in to GrowCast. What exciting things we have going on here at GrowCast. Today, we have another episode of Ask Dr. Coco. Show favorite Dr. Coco is answering your questions long form. If you have questions for Dr. Coco, send them to me at Jordan River IG. That's probably the best way. You can also ask Dr. Coco or send them at GrowCast. Send them to the show. Do what you will. We love deep diving into your questions, and I love using them as a jumping off point to ask my own questions for Coco. Really exciting stuff. Make sure you're entering our giveaways, growcastpodcast.com/giveaway, and see all the action that GrowCast does at growcastpodcast.com/action. Before we get to Dr. Coco, let's give some love to one of our favorite partners, Cultilux Horticultural Lighting. Cultilux.com is where you need to go. Cultilux.com. Promo code GrowCast10 gets you 10% off. Members of MyGrowPass.com getting 25% off their CMH fixtures. Cultilux is the leading supplier in the industry dedicated to providing CMH lamps and fixtures. They've got industry-leading 315-watt, 630-watt, and even 1,000-watt double-ended CMH bulbs. Dang, that sounds nice. All at Cultilux.com, and you get 10% off with GrowCast10. You heard Rod come on the show and talk about his passion for the CMH spectrum and how he is so into progressing this technology. And many of the light fixtures you get out there are Cultilux fixtures anyways, so might as well hit Cultilux. Founded in New Orleans, proud to be the pinnacle manufacturers of LEC lamps. Cultilux.com, GrowCast10. Okay, let's get into the show, everyone. Enjoy Dr. Coco. Hello, podcast listeners. Jordan River here. Thank you for tuning into GrowCast today. So happy to have you with us. Before we get started with today's episode, please share GrowCast. Always share GrowCast. It really helps us out. Give us a good rating and review. Helps boost the show. Check out The Homegrown Helpers by Rob Smith for more growing talk. And my other show, The Coffee, Health, and Science Podcast, a fantastic program, if I do say so myself. Today for GrowCast, though, we have another episode with Dr. Coco, show favorite Dr. Coco. How's it going, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, Jordan. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, actually, man. I'm doing about as good as you can in the craziness, but things are pretty much similar for me. Still doing the podcasting. Got the Home Grow going. People are following the Home Grow. Part of the Coco for Cannabis Spring Autoflower Challenge, Dr. Coco. I made it in. I was late, and I didn't do autoflower. So let me first apologize.
No, that's fine.
If I could explain myself, Dr. Coco, like listeners of the show, no, I'm doing a lot of firsts this run. This is my first small scale run, anywhere close to a run this small. This is my first time growing from seed and my first time in a super soil. So I didn't want to throw autoflowers on top of that.
Yeah. But
I'm going to kind of do like a tribute to the spring autoflower challenge by doing autoflowers at a later date. So my apologies, but also I made it. So there you go.
Hey, there you go. No, we got a whole group of photo period growers growing there in the spring autoflower challenge. That's sort of the thing. When we first started doing these challenges, I was getting pretty specific about it. And, this really started because a few years ago, several of us wanted to just grow the same strains all together at the same time. So there was, I think, 8 of us in that first challenge. And we all like debated and discussed and finally settled on a couple of strains. And then we were all going to grow the exact same strains at the same time and sort of compare based methods and all the rest of that.
I like the themes though. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, no, it definitely helps to have themes, but getting away from sort of tying growers down too much. So make it right. More, available for people to participate in. So this is the spring autoflower challenge at CocoForCannabis.com that we're talking about. We're going to start getting ready for the next one, too, for the listeners that are out there that think about wanting to join one of these things. The next challenge will start in the middle of August, and we're sort of debating how to handle that. In the past, we designated one strain and then had everybody grow that and then try to grow other things they thought would be better than that. But I don't know. We're playing around with some different ideas. But we are going to have another fun challenge coming up in August if you're interested in this. But yeah, the Spring Autoflower Challenge, I'm in it too.
Nice.
I'm enjoying sort of seeing my – I only grow autos once a year, so it's fun, I think, to grow autos. It's different, though. I understand. as your first time into seeds, and especially in a super soil, I think,
I don't want to throw another complication on top of that, man.
Yeah. I definitely get that.
But I'm very impressed with how it's going so far. Holy crap. The Mosca Negra seeds, for those who are following my Instagram, they fucking exploded. I didn't soak them. I didn't do anything. I put them in a wet paper towel straight away. And yep. 2 days later, and they're already popping through the soil and showing green leaf. Like there's little seedlings already. It was fucking nice. Stunning.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, so man. That's what I'm you stoked. Like. Yeah. Seeds are pretty vigorous, man. You know, we were talking about that briefly right before we came on the air, but seeds are fun because they, you know, if they're a happy little seedling, they grow nuts. And it's a lot more fun. You're used to growing clones, which, you know, people often think that clones have a big head start because you're starting with a recognizable plant, not just a little seed.
Right.
But, you know, for several weeks, that recognizable plant just kind of sits there. It's not, you know, most of the action's going on below the ground as the clone, you know, roots and sort of establishes itself.
Which is a stressful process to begin with inherently.
Yeah. And you don't really see what's going on. The plant above ground doesn't do much at all. And then really even once it starts growing, it's growing at sort of a more mature pace. It's not growing with that sort of young plant vigor that the seedlings.
Good point, man.
So, you know, usually I think seedlings start off much smaller than clones and then just grow right past them by around the third week. So yeah, I love growing seedlings.
I'm super stoked.
I've grown seeds and clones together before, and it's really a different experience, I think.
Well, I am enjoying it, and we'll see how the sexing goes for the first time too. That's going to be another first, but I'm not worried about that.
You're growing with regular seeds.
Only one of the strains, Keturah Kush by Cultivated Choice. I had to grow, so Keturah is a strain of coffee, so it's a coffee kush. Uh-huh. How could I not grow it? So I had to, and he sent me regular seeds, and I'm not worried about it. I mean, people send me their pictures all the time. I've dealt with, you know, hundreds, yeah. I mean, maybe thousands of female plants. I know what it looks like when there's balls on a plant, but right. I've never had to do it in my own garden. So there's a little bit of like, I don't know. It's just a little bit different. I'm not worried about it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like almost the emotional part. You get attached to the plants by the time you see the sex, right? I mean, you're growing them in your little garden. You're sort of taking care of them, and then they turn male on you. Yeah, it's just kind of, I don't know. How many of that strain are you growing?
So I popped 6. Cultivated Choice, if you've heard the breeder feature, we love Cultivated Choice. He was generous enough to send us a 12-pack.
Okay, cool.
And I sent him some coffee, of course. But anyways, he's a coffee geek, and he volunteered to send us quite a few seeds for free. Very, very nice individual. So I threw 6 in there. I have a 5 plant count. Right. And I have other ones going. I have 3 Grand Caper. I have 3 Bubblegum Gelato by Mosca. Grand Caper by Purple Caper, of course. So I'm going to have to make some tough choices. And hopefully there's going to be some people, local people, who will take these plants, the females specifically. Right. And I won't have to stomp them, you know.
So you're hoping to end up with 5 females to bring them to flower?
I feel like it wouldn't be... not. That sounds kind of like pompous, not wouldn't be responsible of me, but I think it would behoove the industry if I stuck to the 5 plant count, did it right. You know what I mean? Like how to ideally do it under the current restrictions.
Yeah. 5 plants, man. I mean, it depends on what your goal is, but I often only grow 2 or 3. So
do you grow some like monster plants though, with your constant fertigation method and stuff? Do you have like big fat buds?
Yeah, I mean, I have a big, I fill my 4x4 tent every run.
I haven't seen that content. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. I need to be a little bit better. I just dropped off the map with my last grow journal. I felt so bad in the New Year's grow challenge. I didn't keep up with that. So I'm going to still go back and put up the time lapse and make a couple of final posts. I got so swept up into this grow light guy.
I was going to say you're busy, man. Yeah.
Yeah, Shane and I were working on that, and then I just got so deep into that it was like, you know, I have a certain amount of time I can spend every week on sort of my Cocoa for Cannabis related stuff. And when I have a big project that feels really productive and important and like right in the middle of it, like I just start dedicating all of that time on that project, and I don't go and update my journal. I don't sort of update other things. I realize I still have to update our podcast page. So I totally get a little bit too sort of one track mind. I mean, we made a lot of progress with the Grow Light guide. So if anybody hasn't seen that yet and they're listening, go be sure to check out our new Grow Light calculator and the Grow Light articles that we put up there. But yeah. And then of course we're dealing with the lockdown and the,
yeah, a bunch of craziness there, man.
Yeah. Well, the semester's just wrapping up now. So I'm heading into my last week of classes and I'm not teaching over the summer. So I'm going to be able to be sort of full time on Cocoa for Cannabis stuff.
Nice. That's great.
Progress on some of these things that I haven't kept up with quite as well during this term.
Right. And listen, I want to get into these awesome questions for Ask Dr. Cocoa. That's the official episode theme. But before we do, let me ask you really quickly. Have you seen numbers changes as far as the challenge because of COVID? I'll tell you, all my podcasting numbers are, every one of my shows, not just Growcast, is down because people's schedules are interrupted and they're not commuting at the same times and they're stuck to the new, there's a lot of speculation as to why. Has it affected your numbers?
Yeah, in the opposite direction. So,
wow.
Yeah. And I think that that's sort of the nature of the media. See, people come to Cocoa for Cannabis when they're at home, when they're sort of hanging around, when they're thinking about doing, you know, a home grow, which I think is people stuck at home are like, what should we do at home? I know, let's start growing our own cannabis. And, you know, I think people usually listen to podcasts when they're driving in their cars. I think people usually listen to podcasts on their commute.
Totally. That's why we're getting into video. I've been spending all my time on YouTube, and you're probably glad that you've invested so much time into your own website, where it's really a place that you can explore and learn and spend a lot of time. That's benefiting you now.
Our traffic. Yeah. You know, we're doing things to sort of optimize our SEO, and we put out a bunch of new content this month with the Grow Light guide and all of the associated articles and test reports and all the rest of that. But our traffic just in April went up almost 50%.
Nice, man. That's great.
So from March to
some
April.
More
March was our best month to that point. So some of it's a little bit lost. We're still sort of just organically growing. But there's definitely a positive sort of impact from people staying at home.
It's funny how that works. I'm working with the company Purity Coffee is experiencing a boost too, because it's like kind of delivery coffee, and people are stocking up. So some companies are thriving. But anyways, listen, let's get on to these questions, Dr. Cocoa, because I know we're going to go deep.
All right, let's do it.
We've been having lots of listeners and members submit some great questions. Keep them coming, guys. Dr. Cocoa does go long form, as you know, so it's not like the Wolfman where we can cover the Wolfman. It's not like the Wolfman listener episodes where we can cover a bunch. So forgive us if it takes a while to answer your question. We like to put ones that are more urgent at the top, I would say. But none are super urgent today, and I want to dive into the first question submitted by a listener wanting to hear you, Dr. Cocoa, recap something you talked about on the show already. And I'm not sure exactly what he's looking for, but he wanted you to further extrapolate on the riff you did on VPD and how it affects nutrient uptake. I remember you talked about temperature and humidity and it increasing and decreasing plant feeds. Yeah.
Out to be one of, I've gotten more sort of good feedback about that episode. I think we did this episode back in like last December, last year.
Love it.
A lot of people have, and commercial growers in other crops, actually, Jordan, you have a pretty broad reach here. You're reaching farmers that don't just grow cannabis, have reached out to me and talked about that episode and how that's helped them managing their crops, managing their orchards, managing different things. So,
wow.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. And I sort of realized that maybe that information's not out there a lot. So really, you know, there's a relationship between what we were talking about was vapor pressure deficit and transpiration, and how that may relate to electrical conductivity in the irrigation water in particular. And The way to think about this is, you know, you want to think about the way the water flows through the plant. Most of the water that's taken up by the plant passes, you know, comes into the plant through the roots and leaves the plant through evapotranspiration from the leaves. And the VPD is really a measurement of how much transpiration there's going to be. You can sort of think about it like that. So high VPD is high transpiration. If you have and high VPD means that, you know, you have a high temperature or low humidity, but there's a lot of water holding capacity in the air. So there's a big deficit. That's what the vapor pressure deficit is.
Okay. So it's dry and your plant is transpiring a lot. And that
yes, high VPD means high transpiration. Now when you have high transpiration, that means a lot of water is flowing through the plant, which is sort of what we want most of the time. It makes nutrient transport through the plant really effective. It allows increased uptake of nutrients from the media. And because of both of those things, you can run a lower electrical conductivity in terms of nutrition, just in terms of nutrition, because the nutrient transport is easier and the nutrient uptake is easier. Now, in terms of osmosis, which is the other thing you need to think about when we're fertigating, you really have to run a lower EC in order to allow the plant to do that transpiration. So when we think about sort of VPD affects how water leaves the leaves, electrical conductivity affects how water enters the roots. And so if the water is really salty, it's difficult for the plant to pull it across the osmotic membrane, essentially by manufacturing sugars in the roots. Lower electrical conductivity water is easier for the plant to absorb via osmosis. So when you have high transpiration needs in the leaves, you want to make it easier for the plant to get that water into the roots.
That makes sense. Perfect sense. But now let me twist it before I'm sure you have more to add here.
Okay.
You talk about if the water is salty. And now, is that a direct relation to the synthetic growers? How does it affect fertigation in an organic setup?
Yeah, you know, or if you're fertigating organically, and this is different than if you're amending nutrients into the soil. So this is really for fertigation. Well, at least it's the easiest to control with fertigation. You can do some things to influence the electrical conductivity of the root zone after you've amended. But a lot of that, again, is sort of baked in. And
is it going to eat more, though? Is it going to eat more, though? You know what I mean?
In what situation?
In a super soil, if it's hot and dry, is it going to, you talked about it making it easier to uptake the salty water.
It's going to try to uptake more water. And if that water becomes saturated with dissolved cations, yeah, it's going to become harder for the plant to take up that water.
Okay.
But not necessarily. Plants interact with nutrients in a really different way when they're dealing in a soil situation like that. So we're dissolving chelated nutrient salts into the water, and that creates this sort of salty water. When you're in a super soil grow, the nutrients and the microorganisms, oftentimes, if you're in a living soil, the microorganisms that are helping to sort of break down those nutrients are in the soil itself.
Yeah, making it bioavailable. No salt. So no salt needed. Yeah.
That the plain water can be sort of directly taken up by the plant before it becomes sort of too high salt.
That was my question. Okay, so it doesn't necessarily translate to uptaking more nutrients. It could just be drinking up that water.
Right.
Okay, that makes it. That's right. That answers my question.
The nutrients in the water through separate processes. Okay. So really, whether you're putting, you know, into a super soil or into a living soil, or if you're fertigating in coco, the plants are going to take the water across cell membranes primarily through osmosis, and they are going to absorb nutrients primarily through diffusion across cell membranes.
Very, very enlightening, Dr. Coco.
Or active transport processes. There's different ways to get the nutrients, but they come in through separate ways. And that's why we have to kind of think, especially when we're fertigating, you want to think about both sides of that. You want to think about how the plant needs the nutrition that's in this water, but you also want to think about the plant needs water running through it. And the more nutrients you put into it, the harder it is then just to get the water.
Interesting.
So in a high VPD situation, right, where the plant is going to be using a lot of water, the water doesn't need to have as high a ratio of nutrients. On the one hand, the plant's going to be able to uptake more with more fluid transport, and the plant, even at a lower dose, the water that it's interacting with is a lower dose. It's interacting with more water, so it's able to get the dose that it needs for its photosynthesis.
Interesting. Is there any way for us as growers to use this knowledge in an applicable situation where it's like, let's increase yield by increasing?
Well, yes, this is where you have to manage sort of things at the margins. Increasing yield, my number one trick for increasing yield is keeping your plants as healthy and happy as possible.
Nice.
By and large, there aren't a lot of things that I recommend doing to sort of provoke or trick the plant into giving me a larger yield. There's a lot of stuff like that, though. I mean, there's a lot of people that are experimenting with that, and there's some truth to some of those methods. But my strategy, and sort of what I recommend most growers follow, is just to keep your plant happy and healthy. The stressing techniques for doing other things like that. So with the management of sort of how do you bring this VPD-EC relationship into mind, if your plants are running, if your grow tent is running hot and dry, the best option to do would be to cool it down a little bit and to add some humidity. If that's really prohibitive, then what you can do to sort of mitigate the effects of that hotness and dryness is to run a lower electrical conductivity.
That makes more sense. So it's more about compensating than it is about using this law to your advantage.
Right. It's more about sort of how do I manage the situation that I'm confronted with.
That's really great. So,
yeah. If you're, and a lot of growers have issues managing their VPD, or, it might be a heat wave that comes through and you don't usually use air conditioning and you're not set up to use air conditioning. And normally the climate is fine where you live, but you're going to have a heat wave this week.
Right.
Well, drop your electrical conductivity a couple hundred points or point. One or two, depending on if you're using micro or millisiemens, and sort of give the plants a little bit of a break. So you can take it off one end when you can't take it off the other, essentially.
Makes sense. Absolutely. Does that wrap up the VPD question? We have some other good ones here. Is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. Just, it's also true a little bit on the opposite end. If you're facing a low VPD situation, because you have high humidity, you can run a higher electrical conductivity because the plants will be passing less water through their evapotranspiration, essentially through themselves. In a low VPD is low transpiration, and low transpiration, the plants are usually benefited by running a couple hundred points higher. So the adjustment for both of those, I usually wouldn't do more than 300 points off of sort of the baseline where you would expect your electrical conductivity to be. But moving within that range, sort of up to plus 300 in a really low VPD situation, down to sort of minus 300 if you start at, say, 1200 VPD, and it's going to get very hot, and you're not going to really be able to control that, maybe run at 900 EC. During that heat wave, or you could go all the way up, towards 1500 if you're really under low transpiration situations.
Interesting. Let me ask you this before we jump on to the next question. Have you played around with low temp grows and like lowering your temperatures throughout the entire cycle?
No, it's too expensive for me here.
Oh, because you're in. Yeah, that'll be tough for you.
Yeah, you need to live in a cooler climate and grow during the winter. I don't complain much. I live in Los Angeles, and we have, you know, probably 10 months out of the year, I have kind of an ideal climate for growing indoors. I don't have to use heat. I never have to use a heater. And I don't have to use air conditioning mode. We're getting towards that time now where the air conditioning is starting to come on a couple of days a week here. No, so I don't really complain, but it is one thing that makes it difficult. I can never get it very cold, even in January, and my tent is still running 80 degrees. So
yeah, because that is one thing that I understand. You can kind of control, and I understand it's a bit of a sacrifice yield-wise, but those low-temp grows, man, sometimes they've got tend to preserve the terpenes pretty well, in my opinion, yeah. and they might come out a little bit more resinous. And my understanding is that I know professional growers who grow for extraction only, and they're really into these low-temp grows. So interesting stuff.
Yeah, that's some of the stuff that I was talking about, right? That's some of the sort of the tricking the plant into doing some of those things. And there's a lot.
I loved that tick. I loved that tick. You don't necessarily recommend it, and people are exploring that. But I like that.
Well, you know, I mean, I kind of recommend it. I don't recommend it for new growers. I'm always sort of curious as to who the audience is, right? And I kind of think about a bunch of people that are on their first grow is at least some portion of the audience that's sort of learning how to do this. And when you hear about things like that, you want to try them. I think that it's a risky proposition. A lot of these, drought stressing is another one that could really increase cannabinoid terpene.
We've discussed it, but I've also discussed how the reason people get behind drought stressing is because of that one study, and people love that fucking study. And it's great. And I'm sure it's true, and I'm sure it's great, but I've always felt that way about things like cold temps. And I'm still a believer in the darkness period. Hey, really quickly, even though I know that one's...
I do that too.
And oh, good. That makes me feel good because I know it's less concrete. But before we move on, I want to share something really cool, which is I was down in Colombia on the coffee farms with on La Pradera Coffee Farm and La Finca Primavera, two regenerative agriculture, large-scale coffee operations.
Awesome.
Coco was so cool, man. But one of the things that they do on La Pradera is they harvest according to the moon cycles, and it's an ancient practice. And then they went and they actually, companies like Purity Coffee, the one I'm working with, actually lab tested the results. And it turns out that you get, I want to say, higher levels of certain sugars, like a sweeter cherry, harvesting under a full moon. It's like, it's a fact. It's something about the gravitational pull of the moon drawing sweetness out of the cherries. And so, isn't that wild? So this guy Oscar was saying that he was making his workers do it. They thought he was crazy, and then apparently it's true.
I'd be interested in if there's a study or something that you have there. Maybe we could talk about that off the air. We've gone around on this. Dr. Photon and I have the mythical, my imaginary friend, Dr. Photon.
Your other personality, the other side of your personality.
I was gonna say. I'm like, you know, it's amazing that he keeps letting me on this show, even though he thinks I'm obviously an insane person. We've been talking about the effects that the moon may have. And Photon's always been really skeptical of that.
Hey, man, I trust Oscar. I mean, maybe we're not there in terms of long-term studies, but we have some small-scale tests that show level changes.
I'm more open to that potential, I think, than, and there is some obvious impacts that the moon cycle has on biological organisms.
So. Right, outside of just direct light too, right? Like we know that there are biological processes in human beings that are affected by the moon. So yeah, who knows, man? I think
it would be interesting to get into. So I would be interested to read anything on there. Maybe I'll get back in and start looking. Photon has had an article sort of stub. We share article ideas and then develop outlines and write articles kind of back and forth. And that he put this stub into the early part of that process called cannabis come under the influence of the moon? But that article idea hasn't been outlined yet. So
please, I'm so fascinated in that stuff, man. I love all things astronomy and relating to plants and relating to biology.
Yeah, no, I think we have a whole section of articles in that system that we haven't developed yet, our whole myths and controversies section. And I end up talking about a lot of that stuff on podcasts. But yeah, we have a number of things we need to get into. I'm going to be working on the defoliation article here in the next few weeks. That's been a big one that I need to get up for like years now. And talk about sort of the myths of defoliation, but
I'm going to go ahead and
dark harvest time, the dark period before the harvest. We want to talk about the moon, music, those kinds of things, and just sort of address whether or not there's any science to back any of these kinds of things.
Oh, I would love the music one, and I don't particularly think that is going to show like great efficacy, but it's definitely something that I'm interested in, and I'm going to make an effort this time to defoliate as little as possible.
Leave the leaves. Hashtag leave the leaves.
Yeah. So I'm down with that. Now that excludes like the bottom pruning though, right? I'm supposed to still clean up the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, once leaves are really shaded out, but keep in mind, even those bottom leaves, you're pruning them and this kind of relates back to the BPD thing. You're pruning them to manage climate. Because the leaves will transpire and they're not necessarily going to be photosynthesizing. So the leaves that aren't getting light are just sort of adding relative humidity.
Never thought about it like that. That's an interesting point.
But if relative humidity is not a problem, those leaves are actually stored nutrients for the plant. And you know this because if you leave them there, the plant will eventually draw the nutrients out of those leaves. They turn yellow, they shrivel up, they look like you have some deficiency, but you realize it's just because it's shaded out undergrowth. The plant is reallocating the nutrients from that leaf to other places in the plant. So if you don't need to cut them off, you don't have to cut them off. The plant will actually use them later on for other purposes. It's essentially a little bit of a bank for the plant. But you can cut them off. Certainly that the benefit of sort of storing those nutrients does not outweigh the managing of climate, especially since we're pretty much already providing the plants with everything they would need.
Makes sense. Okay. Before we get back to the show, let's give some love to Greencraft Distribution, the online hydro superstore, the online hydro superstore. Just go to greencraftdistribution.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off. Members of mygrowcast.com get 25% off site wide. Greencraft Distribution is a New England based online hydro superstore representing a ton of awesome grow brands, as well as some premium CBD products. Go to greencraftdistribution.com to check out Cold War Organics, I believe they have up there. It's a great line. Brands like Kushly and Canatai, Stash Logics, lots of great stuff. CBD products as well. Get your tincture up there if you desire. Maybe you'll find your next favorite CBD brand at greencraftdistribution.com. Make sure to use promo code GROWCAST for 10% off. Members of mygrowpass.com getting 25% off Greencraft Distribution. It's good to shop from home, especially during these crazy times. It's nice to be able to peruse a hydro store from online. All right, everyone, let's get back to Dr. Coco. All right, we have to jump on to question number two, only like 30 minutes in here. Let's see. A member. Oh, yeah, we got a GrowPass member. Oh, this just happened in the live stream chat. So I thought I'd bring it out here because I did my best. Let me read the question, say what I answered, and then you can give me your take.
Cool.
So basically, we were in the GrowPass live stream, and a member is growing a CBD strain, and he was asking about any possible grow methods, anything you can do, basically, to keep that CBD high and keep the THC low, basically affecting the different levels of specific cannabinoids was his question. Rob said something really great, which was, we don't really know much, but what Rob recommended is growing it, finding out how the breeder grows and kind of mimicking that. So not messing with the way it was grown. So you can kind of get a similar result. I thought that was a smart thing. I reckoned back to someone saying something about UV light affecting levels of THCV and how they were trying to, you know, patent that into their grow light or something like that. So I was thinking maybe you might have some light to shed on that. But then, yeah, I know this is also a big deal among hemp farmers who, like, if their crop gets above a certain THC, they have to destroy their crop. So, so what do you have to say about this?
The UV thing is interesting, although I don't know that anybody, I don't think I've seen anything about UV specific to CBD.
Twice so on the show, it was, THCV is when it came up. Two different times, two different guests.
Right, but it would be interesting to know if CBD biosynthesis may respond to any kind of spectrums, either in or out of the PAR wavelengths like that. I'm not aware of that, but it just got me thinking that...
Wouldn't we know that?
That's interesting. Like, I wonder if a high CBD strain exposed to different spectra may...
That should be easy to test, right?
It should be pretty easy to test. Yeah, there's just so much stuff to test, man. And easy to test is maybe a little bit of a misnomer because a lot of home growers think that they're running, controlled experiments every time they put a seed in the ground and think that sort of the results of their grow are scientifically valid results. So easy to test means that we have a relatively large sample size grown under uniform conditions with a control grow that is only different in the one variable that we're trying to measure and study. It would be easy to set that up for this, right? You could have two grows, lots of plants on one side, you treat them with various spectra, on the other side you don't, and you see if that has any kind of impact.
But that still doesn't give you necessarily a direct scientific answer. You're right. It would be an easy test to conduct, right? But who knows how much it would tell us.
And that's, this is one of those areas that... It's like we have two different forms of knowledge. The CBD specifically is kind of new and an interesting angle on this. But whenever we're dealing with cannabinoids and sort of what to do to improve them and all of that, we have decades of anecdotal grower experiences.
Right.
And then we have a few years of some relatively scattershot sort of studies of this. That are looking at different specific elements, but we don't really have the full picture yet from sort of the scientific side. We've actually been able to see some things that really call into question a lot of sort of the folk wisdom that's used out of those sort of decades of experience.
Oh. Share with us, please.
Well, we go by, for example, harvest window, looking at trichomes turning amber, there's been some interesting studies showing how other things may change trichomes to amber in certain strains. It may not be the degradation of THC into CBN, which we usually assume, and said that, and sort of that's the explanation for why we harvest at that particular moment. For a lot of strains, it probably is that. But for some strains, they may turn amber as a result of certain, my brain just hit a glitch. I just glitched, Jordan.
That's fine. This isn't live. Certain environmental factors, what would cause it to, you left me on the edge of my seat.
Terpenes. I'm sorry. The word terpene for some reason just like totally lost my, it didn't come into my mouth. So it may be caused by the production and the synthesis of certain terpenes. Maybe turning the trichomes on some strains.
Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense, man, because all the terpy stuff is like every time I get a good terpy cart, like the one I'm holding in my hand, it's always amber. And every time I get those bright yellow high THC ones, they never have flavor. So you're telling me that the color of the trichome head is being dyed by the terpene?
In some strains, it is, yeah.
That makes sense. I've seen purple terpenes. I know terpenes are responsible for the red color of tomatoes. This is all coming together here, Coco.
Yeah. And see, everybody's been sort of, it's also caused, and there's different kinds of amber too. And if you pay really close attention when you're looking at trichomes, and if you've been doing this for years, you sort of know that not every trichome that's amber looks the same, but we kind of all respond to like, oh, there's an amber. There's one that's a little bit darker than the other ones. That means that, you know, I've hit my harvest window.
You open my eyes to that. The opaque amber versus the translucent amber.
Yeah, exactly. And even within there, I think that there are different kinds of translucent ambers. And that's probably telling you different things about what's going on. I think by the time you get to those real opaque ambers, then you really are probably done with cannabinoids biosynthesis and things are degrading at that point. But basically, there's a lot that we still need to really learn specifically about specific strains. And, you know, what different strains prioritize at different moments during their ripening process may be different as well. Most of the strains that we cultivate, and when we talked about this before, I mentioned this, most of the strains that we cultivate are high THC strains, and they prioritize the production of THC during most of the sort of early growth of those resin heads. However, now that we're really breeding these high CBD strains that have really low THC, it's likely that the plant, that we're actually affecting the plant sort of what it's prioritizing, the order that it's prioritizing it in. So it may be sort of ripening in a different kind of way than the high.
That's fascinating, man. I've never heard that take before. And it makes sense. I'm looking forward to a shift away from this high THC stuff. I'm one of those people who much rather enjoys, whether it's a cartridge or a flower, a lower THC percentage on there, and then getting those flavors from that trichome head being packed full of terpenes. I mean, it's just a better experience, in my opinion.
I think, to be perfectly honest with you, I think almost everybody prefers that when
you feel that way.
Their mental expectations don't ruin their experience. I think that we've become sort of, I don't know, THC is sexy or something. It's like attractive. Everybody wants that high THC thing.
I think it's simple. I think it's because you get two numbers out of 100. And I literally see people walk into the dispensary and go, what's the highest percentage you have? And that's how they make their selection.
How the bud tenders sometimes sell it too. They're like, oh, this is the highest tested strain here, whatever.
I mean,
and they charge extra for it and all the rest of that. No. If you really, the other thing is it's hard to really, I don't know how good you are, but it's hard to judge it, like different effects of strains until you get a little bit of experience and you kind of got to go back and forth with them to really understand how they affect you. So I don't
only the wake and bake in a healthy state. That's the only way to really review a strain. And I do feel I'm pretty good at articulating the effects and things like that. But I do understand what you're saying, which is it has to be a clean slate.
It has to be a clean slate, and you have to not get so high that you forget to like write down how you're feeling.
Well, that never happens to me, Dr. Coco. But yes, you're absolutely right.
Like, oh man, yeah.
I'm largely unaffected. If you have that strain, send it to me because I will take that. I'd gladly take it.
Oh, I have one of those strains. I turn on the vape. I like pull a couple of hits off of the vape. I guess I turn it off. I plug it back in, and then like half an hour later, I'm thinking, wait, wasn't I gonna vape? Oh crap! I must have already done that. Look, it's charging again.
Fuck yeah,
whoa,
man.
Whoa, dude, this is some strong stuff.
That's my type of strain right there, man. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you, this is a strain. It's just one of the seedsman strains. It's Girl Scout crack. It is like has me on my ass, man. I give a good shout out to the Girl
Scout hell yeah.
crack from Seedsman.
Is kicking butt, man. We were just doing just really quick, Dr. Coco, you'll appreciate this. The resource for our members was a grower's guide to terpenes. One of the things that we might suggest our growers do is if you're deciding what to grow, instead of, we've talked about, you know, finding out the breeders and all this, I said, maybe go with terpenes. Find out what terpenes you like. Follow this guide to see what strains are high in those terpenes. So when we were looking for, you know, just literally an availability of random specific strains, Seedsman kept coming up over and over and over. And we love Harvest Mutual. They're one of our partners and they've got a great selection, but Seedsman is kicking butt out there and he's still operating during COVID, right?
Yeah, they moved distribution back to the UK because Spain went into lockdown. They had been shipping out of Spain.
So
they actually kind of went through a lot to continue operations and to be able to continue to send out orders.
Wow.
Relocated where they're warehousing all their seeds.
Spain had it bad, but yeah, that's nuts. But anyways,
yeah,
where were we? We're all over the place here. We
were all over the place. but yeah, I think that there's so basically when it comes to a lot of these questions about how do strains ripen, what's the best indication about when to harvest, you know, what's the order in terms of the biosynthesis of the cannabinoids and terpenes? How does the biosynthesis of different cannabinoids affect each other? When do things start to degrade into sort of inferior byproducts? The best example of that is when and in sort of what rate does THC degrade into CBN? A lot of that stuff we're sort of learning much more about. And I think that, you know, a few years ago, we thought that we knew more than we did.
We do now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of these things that as we learn a little bit more, we realize how much some of the basic assumptions may have been a little bit off. Now, that said, those basic assumptions, and you know, I deal with this in my work with farmers in Central America as well. There's folk farming practices that are often not related. The explanations for them, at least, are not related to the scientific explanations. But right. They've been refined through, you know, various generations, and they work. They work even though they might work for reasons that the farmers themselves are unaware of.
Of course, that's the nature of ancient wisdom, right? That's why it was beneficial, because you can actually pass on a lesson in a story. And maybe the story isn't true or whatever it is, but it's more about just doing the practice, right? I think that's why you see so much wisdom in the ancient religions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, and the wisdom that doesn't work is sort of abandoned, right?
So exactly. I mean, they talk about rotating the crop. They talk about rotating crops in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. You know, and farmers that I work with, for example, when they burn fields to clear debris off of their field. And then they have a period of 2 weeks that they wait before they'll sow the field. And they explain that the field needs to cool down.
Right.
And that's their entire explanation sort of for why you're waiting those 2 weeks. It has much more to do with the nitrogen cycle coming out of that burn event and sort of establishing, you know, allowing things to settle into the soil and all that.
Nice.
The farmers are unaware of the nitrogen cycle impacts on sort of planting immediately after the burn. But, you know, somebody noticed that at some point. Somebody planted too soon. The plants probably got adversely affected. And they explained it that the soil was too hot. And everybody sort of accepted that explanation. And for generations, they've been now saying, no, you can't. You know, you can't plant too soon because the soil is too hot. I mean, we can measure the soil. It's not hot by, you know, a few hours after the burn.
Right.
So we may be doing things that work, even though we don't know why we're doing them that way.
Right. We don't
know. Now, if I started to give farmers some scientific information, and this is a real problem that I have, if I start to give farmers some of the scientific information about it sort of, oh no, look, it's cool again just a few hours after the fire. If that was the only piece of scientific information I shared, I would lead them into making bad decisions, right? Mm. It would have been better for them to just sort of follow their folk practices of believing it was too hot. If I try to get sort of deeper into things, until we get to sort of a much more complete scientific understanding, it's actually better for the farmers to follow their folk understanding of the garden process in a lot of ways.
This is a really eye-opening conversation for me, Dr. Coco, because I've had trouble with this myself, which is I love everything that the academic and scientific community represents. Yeah. Sometimes I have a hard time when they just need a white paper to believe the most basic truths. It's almost like we've forgotten some of the ancient truths because they haven't been verified by our new dogmatic structure, which is the opposite of science. And what you're saying is extremely genuine, and I agree with it 100%, man, which is you need to basically take it on from a balanced approach, right?
Right.
And I think that's what's lost on a lot of people. But yeah, I hope that made sense. But I've thought about this a lot, man. And that's a great answer.
Yeah, I've seen it with farmers in Central America, and I see it with cannabis farmers. Where you really run into a dangerous situation is where you're operating on sort of a folk knowledge base, and now you're trying to implement a couple of specific things because of some scientific knowledge of those sort of specific things. Yeah. So you keep all that in mind. I think that we're developing, especially with some of these things like cannabinoid biosynthesis and ripening and all of that. There are really two different sort of tacks to this. And I think the folk tack works pretty well. I think and for decades has served cannabis farmers pretty well. And within that, folk knowledge was sort of waiting for the trichomes to turn amber to harvest and all of this. Within that, some people have refined and have other little subtle things that they look for, and they have explanations for why they think they're looking for those things. And that's all emerged out of, years and years of practice in harvesting and smoking and all of the rest of
that. Yeah, exactly. Just that observation.
It hasn't emerged out of sort of carefully controlled laboratory studies. As we're starting to get these carefully controlled laboratory studies, it's really interesting to see how some of those assumptions may have been off in certain sense.
Exactly. And I think your approach is awesome, but also I think your approach to the folksy versus scientific is great. And I think it's compassionate, but also I'm not surprised that just judging a trichome head by its color may not be the end all be all. I think as we learn more, like you said, we may be able to dig deeper into the nuances of that color. But I would say that points back to something I've said for a long, long time, which is I often recommend that people run their strains for as long as the breeder recommends, because the breeder, he's the one who created that strain. I think he has a specific vision of it in his mind. Yeah. And I think that there's credence to that option. If you want to just go with what the breeder says because you want to experience it the way he intended, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's a good choice.
I would still have to look at the plant though when we ran out of that breeder time. I've had some plants that were pretty radically different than what. Yeah.
It depends on the grow method, right? It depends on your setup. It depends on all those things. But if it's within reason, let me add that caveat. If it's within reason,
harvestable when it comes to that time, right?
Right.
If it's,
don't want to ruin it.
You're not obviously harvesting a plant too early. I had a plant. I don't remember the breeder right now. It was supposed to be a fast flowering plant. It was Power Africa. And it was supposed to be a fast variety of Power Africa. And they advertised a 7-week flowering period, so 49 days. I ended up taking that plant, I think 110 or something like ridiculous. It ended up being a really long flowering plant and was great. I mean, produced nice ripe buds. I certainly didn't take it like 6 weeks too long. But it was not anywhere. I mean, it was practically still stretching on day 49. So at the end of that breeder's window, a couple of things about the breeder's window. They should be pretty good. A lot of breeders, will count those windows from flowering days. So when the plants first show visible signs of flowering after flipping to 12-12 lighting, and that's really because that's actually what the plant morphologically is doing. So the plant's flowering period begins when the plant starts to flower. It doesn't necessarily begin when you flip the lights to 12-12.
I think that's an important distinction, because my understanding is that the kind of
default is the day that you flip.
Right.
And so if, so that might be something you want to specify with the breeder. But,
yes.
And it really and depends breeders on the breeder. Do it.
I've definitely seen breeders counting both ways. Okay. You got to think if they're growing, if you're producing for outdoor growers, there is no such thing as a flip.
True.
And the outdoor growers are interested in the flowering period because they, based on their latitude or based on their climate, they need to be able to harvest by a certain time. So those flowering periods for outdoor grows are always counted from when the plant starts showing visible signs of flowering.
Very good point. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think some growers are just going to, I think some breeders are just going to outright have, you know,
manipulate. Yeah. That's another reason to count from the pistils day, right? What I call it, because, it makes the flowering period seem shorter.
Yeah, exactly. There could be some disingenuous. But yeah. But again, if you go pick up some 9 pound hammer from Jinx, I'm sure you're going to know exactly what to expect. You
now,
know.
One of the things, Jordan, that's come out in these challenges that, that we've done, more so when we used to really all grow the same strains, there's a relationship. The light that you use, I believe, the light that you use can have a marginal impact on flowering duration. Not the spectrum necessarily, but the density, the quantity of flux.
Ripening faster with more?
Yeah. Growers that are fully lit in their grow spaces, seem to come ripen.
Finish earlier?
Like a week earlier than growers that are underlit for their
interesting
space.
Interesting.
And I've actually, I'm starting to pick up on that pattern, myself. I was really running an underlit tent for a number of years, and I have a full complement of PPF at this point. And this last harvest ripened up on me faster than I thought it was going to, sort of faster than I was expecting.
Nice, man. Well, that's a, another.
So yeah, a couple of little things there. To come. I mean, I think we're way off of this question, which I think what originally was something about growing methods to keep CBD high and THC low.
No, you answered it very well, which is what we don't have those methods, especially scientifically researched. We've got some folk practices. We went into that whole thing. I think that the terpenes affecting the color of the trichome heads. I think I switched those words earlier in the show, so apologize. I think I said terpenes when I meant trichomes, but that's very enlightening. And the different types of color is also enlightening. So,
and that just means that it's probably going to be strain specific. So a lot of these rules that we have for harvesting that are really sort of, you know, shared as general rules that can be applied to any plant. I think that there really are going to be more strain specific. If you're growing a high CBD strain, we may learn that you really want to be looking for a different set of characteristics in terms of harvest window. The only other thing I wanted to say there is, you know, the genetics are the number one thing for the high CBD, low THC, is getting the right strain. The second thing is harvest timing, in terms of what you can manage as a grower. But again, we're not entirely dialed in on that. We have some ideas about that, but I think that those ideas may continue to evolve and change. And I'm going to go through, you know, I have one more week of my semester and then I give my finals. And once I grade finals, I'm going to be able to sort of dive in and be full time on my Cocoa for Cannabis stuff. And this is one of the big projects. I want to get through as much of the sort of harvest things. I still don't have my harvest article up. We did those podcasts like months ago now. And I'm going to go through all of the current literature and really try to synthesize this into a complete guide on that.
Nice, man. I've shared that episode with so many people. Your harvest episode is awesome. For those who may just be tuning into the show now, go back and listen to all the episodes with Dr. Coco. Really, this has been a really fruitful partnership and collaboration here, Dr. Coco. I'm excited to be part of the challenges. I might be most excited that you've hooked up with Shane, because that's really cool that that's like two huge powerhouses in the industry working together. So
absolutely. I'm most excited about that too. And that's all a Jordan River production there bringing us.
No way, man. That was
that was cool. That shows you that, you know, I was sort of blown over that, like, we do a growcast, the growcast drops, and the next day I get an email from Shane from Micro Lighting. I'm like, oh wow. I mean, Jordan's got reach here. Big
It's crazy.
Players are listening to Jordan's podcast.
It's really crazy. And yeah, you're right. Big industry players, tons. And the fans are interacting so much. Like, Growcast fans are fucking awesome. They always respond. They always show up. We had some big donations for the fundraiser we did for Northwest Families for Autism. It's just really great, man. I'm very, very grateful. So thank all you listeners. Thank you, Dr. Coco, and your whole Coco for Cannabis community. Stay tuned. I'm going to upgrade my thing to upgrade. I'm going to update
your journal
tonight as of recording. So I'll get that up there and show you my seedlings that are already popping.
I'll make you a deal with that, and I'll update my journal for the SFAC today as well. Yeah, I'm about to move up to my second containers. They're still in seedling pots here, 2 weeks old exactly today. Started on 420, and we're recording this on May 4th. So yeah, 2 weeks getting up into second containers. I might wait until Wednesday. But
real quick, what strain are you most excited about that you're growing this time?
You know, well, I'm growing Think Different again. I grew this in last year's Spring Autoflower Challenge, and it went into flowering first in front of the other three autoflowers that I was growing. The other three autoflowers turned into absolute monster plants that just sort of like took over and dominated the plant, the tent, and really shaded Think Different out. So I have enough, and I got less than 10 grams off that plant. I mean, it was just buried, you know, out of a grow that netted over 500 grams total with four plants.
Damn.
So I'm growing that again, and it seems to be, although who knows, it was one of the leaders early on last time too, but yeah, there's a number of growers in my forum that really like Think Different. So they've all been encouraging me to give it another chance. Nice. I'm having to look over. Oh, I have a AK Auto, that I don't know where it
Old
came
school.
From.
Nice. Don't know where it came from. What do you mean? Did you put it in there yourself or
I went in
up and there it was.
I keep my seeds in a little soft-sided cooler in the refrigerator, in one of the lower shelves in the refrigerator back in the back. And I went in there because I knew I had some various autoflower seeds from orders in, you know, recent and not so recent orders. And one of the first little bags that I pulled out was like 10, I don't know, 8 or 10 seeds in a little bag. That in my handwriting, I had written on the little bag, Auto AK, and then something illegible. I mean, I posted a picture of it in the chat room to see if anybody could like figure this out. I have no idea. I don't remember where they came from. I don't know. See, these, it's like hashtag stoner problems. So I think
the mystery AK, dude.
It's mystery AK. You know, I think back last year, we were working on some deals with the Spring Autoflower Challenge with the London Seed Center. I think they might have sent them to me, and I think that's like my best guess.
That sounds legit then.
Yeah, they came from somewhere. So I got some, I was like, where did these come from? I was so confused. So I'm excited to see what happens with
I love AK, man. Yeah, I'm super stoked on the AK, so.
Yeah, I taught myself a lesson that I already knew already on this grow, which is, you know, a fun thing to sort of show new growers that we still can definitely make mistakes. I toasted one of my seedlings by not properly preparing my cocoa when I transplanted it into its seedling container with cocoa.
Okay, so is that like the washing or buffering that you need to do?
Yeah, you know, I was short on time. I was going back and forth between starting them all. I have a bunch of tuper. I don't know.
Oh, nice. Yeah, of course. That's the half cocoa, half soil mix from Royal Gold, I believe.
Yeah, it's more than half cocoa, but yeah, there's like forest products and a little bit of soil and some other things. I'm not really sure.
Wolfman loves that stuff.
To go back through this, but I talked to Rick Elliott at Royal Gold, who hooked me up with a bunch of this stuff. And
nice, you
I've kind of been meaning to try it out. So I decided when I started the Spring Autumn Flower Challenge, I would do a cocoa versus tuper. Finally, I went back and forth on it. And when it came time to put my little sprouts, they sprouted up in their Jiffy pellets. When it came time to put them up into the cocoa, I didn't have any cocoa ready for them. So I excavated one of the pots that I had just recently harvested. I flushed it with FluoroClean. So I flushed it with an agent, knocked the electrical conductivity down, and then just transplanted into that without buffering it again. It was low EC, at least in the sort of water that passed through it. But boy, did the seedlings did not like that. Not even a little bit. So both the seedlings that went into cocoa, and you know what? I mean, I know this, and I've done a video on this, and I have an article on this. It's like I knew I was sort of risking it and sort of taking a chance, but I was lazy. So that's a good lesson in not being lazy and in properly preparing your media each time. So what I needed to do was really rinse it out. And re-soak it in CalMag solution and then rinse it out again to get the electrical conductivity back in. And at that point it would have been fine. Fence. I might not bring one of the seedlings with me along for the rest of the ride because it got really sort of shocked by that experience and is now well behind the others.
Yeah, that'll happen. And that's why I got some extra ones going because I kind of anticipate that.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, I only really wanted three. Like I said, last year we did the Spring Autoflower Challenge and three of my autos grew so large that they didn't leave room for the fourth. And so I was thinking about only growing three this time. So I'll be totally fine with it if that's the case. And, you know, I like to sort of use these as learning opportunities, not just for me, but if everybody else can see like how horribly I struggle when I don't properly rebuffer my media, I think that'll give them good incentive to properly rebuffer their media themselves.
That's exactly right, man. If anything, it serves as a useful like Instagram reminder for those.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So educating.
I have to get over those things like, damn it, you should be better than this. Like, what the hell? Like, you knew this.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking too. I didn't want to come back and put my first grow on Instagram and then fail. But I do have a lot of harvests under my belt, so I do feel confident. And B, if I fail, then so what, man? I think the Growcast listeners are awesome. They're not going to judge me and they'll learn from my mistakes and it is what it is. But honestly, I feel like it's like riding a bike. Everything's been so easy so far. My seedlings are already above, the Mosca seedlings are already above ground and healthy. It's like, I feel like I just hopped back on a bike and doing this show and producing so much content around growing has really helped me, you know, not have that ring rust, if you will.
Yep. No, absolutely. And, you know, it's a great sort of source of new ideas and you got all these kind of good practices floating around in your head.
Yeah, I got Dr. Coco. I'm going to be texting you in the middle of the night. Help me out, man. What's this bug? And I'll send you like a grainy photo of like...
Oh, yeah. No, my favorite ones are the ones that are reportedly showing nutrient deficiency in the leaves taken under blurple lighting. Where like all I can see is, I mean, you know, it's
like a rave. It just looks like a rave.
It looks like, yeah. And I'm like, dude, I mean, I can sort of see that maybe the leaf is not a healthy leaf. But like it's beyond that, I'm guessing here.
Oh, man, that's good. So follow Dr. Coco and send him your blurry pictures at Dr. MJ Coco, I believe, on Instagram.
Dr. MJ Coco on Instagram. Yeah, you know, come over to our chat room on CocoForCannabis.com with your
blurry pictures photos. There.
Yeah, at least there we can talk to you about your blurry photos, give you a hard time and make you go take other ones. To everybody out there, though, get a little shop light. And bring it into your tent and turn off your blurples when you're in the tent working on your plants and turn on your little shop light. It'll be easier on your light, on your eyes. It'll be easier on your photos and on all the rest of us to help diagnose any issues.
Damn.
Yeah, I actually put a little clip fan, like a shop light clip fan, you know, you just sort of got a little reflector and a plug it into the wall thing, clip it onto the top of your tent and turn that thing on. I put that in our product guide because so many people, you know, are taking pictures under their grow lights. And even if you're not using Blurple lighting, it's still better not to be doing a bunch of your plant training and all the rest of that stuff while you're working under the lights when they're on. You should have another light in there if you need light to see. Don't use your grow lights for you to see.
Definitely. Another little exiting best practice there. I love it.
Yeah.
Let's get you back immediately, Dr. Coco. Can we do a little series? Because we have more questions. We're ready for more action.
Absolutely. Yeah. We got, you know, just a tease. We had like a long-term storage question. We had some other questions about CBN and THC and stuff like that. And we'll always get more. And
this is just
listeners out there, send Jordan your questions. It's fun to sort of do a show in this format.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. At Growcast on Instagram, send your questions there or to me, whatever is easier for you. I'm at Jordan River IG. Make sure to follow Growcast, though. We've been doing live streams and I've been addicted to the giveaways. I've been giving away a ton of stuff. So get up on there, everybody. CocoForCannabis.com, of course. That's all. This is Dr. Coco. I guess, did I not say thank you, Dr. Coco, for taking the time today?
Thanks for having me on, Jordan. It's always fun. Hope everybody comes on over and visits us at CocoForCannabis.com. Like I said, come check out our chat room or start a grow journal. Check out our new grow light guide. That's the collaboration with Shane that Jordan hooked us up, the two of us together. And I'm going to be getting in doing some more stuff with that. I'm going to start grow light testing here by the end of this month. I already have a couple of units lined up to do some tests on. So yeah, come on over and visit us. It's always a pleasure, Jordan, to come on and do these shows.
Awesome, everybody. This is Dr. Coco and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe out there and grow smarter.
Grower love, everyone.
That's our show with Dr. Coco. Hope you enjoyed it. I know you did. We love Dr. Coco. Looking forward to having him back. Like I said, submit your questions. Please, always submit your questions. Shout out to the YouTube page. Yeah, that's right. Growcastpodcast.com/YouTube will get you there, or just Google us. Make sure to follow us. We have all of our episodes posted up there, but also we've got several video projects in the works. I want to be doing long form evergreen videos to really dive deep into some grow subjects, give my thoughts and opinions, help growers out there on their journey of being a cultivator. So sign up to the YouTube page, subscribe to the YouTube page. We do appreciate you guys doing that. Shout out to Start to Finish Consulting for all your consulting needs. Every situation, every setup, we've got you covered. Start to Finish. Start to Finish 710 on Instagram. And finally, soundcloud.com/JBlanked to find Jay Blank, who did the beat. That's all today, folks. Thank you so much. Take care of yourselves out there. Be safe. Be healthy. Love one another. I will speak to you soon. Bye-bye.